would, of course, be utterly confounded to explain how that had happened. Well, we are in the same position in space as our puzzled Flatlander, only we are flummoxed by a higher dimension. Just as there is no place where you can find the edge of the universe, so there is no place where you can stand at the center and say, this is where it all began. This is the centermost point of it all. We are all at the center of it all. Actually, we don't know that for sure. We can't prove it mathematically. Scientists just assume that we can't really be the center of the universe. Think what that would imply. But that the phenomenon must be the same for all observers in all places. Still, we don't actually know. For us, the universe goes only as far as light has traveled in the billions of years since the universe was formed. This visible universe, the universe we know and can talk about, is a million, 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 that's one followed by 24 zeros, miles across. But according to most theories, the universe at large, the meta-universe, as it is sometimes called, is vastly roomier still. According to Riis, the number of light years to the edge of this larger, unseen universe would be written not with 10 zeros, not even with 100, but with millions. In short, there's more space than you can imagine already, without going to the trouble of trying to envision some additional beyond. For a long time, the Big Bang Theory had one gaping hole that troubled a lot of people, namely that it couldn't begin to explain how we got here. Although 98% of all the matter that exists was created with the Big Bang, that matter consisted exclusively of light gases, the helium, hydrogen, and lithium that we mentioned earlier. Not one particle of the heavy stuff so vital to our own being, carbon, nitrogen, oxygen, and all the rest, emerged from the gaseous brew of creation. But, and here's the troubling point, to forge these heavy elements, you need the kind of heat and energy of a Big Bang. Yet there has been only one Big Bang, and it didn't produce them. So where did they come from? Interestingly, the man who found the answer to that question was a cosmologist who heartily despised the Big Bang as a theory and coined the term Big Bang sarcastically as a way of mocking it. We'll get to him shortly. But before we turn to the question of how we got here, it might be worth taking a few minutes to consider just where exactly here is. 2. Welcome to the solar system. Astronomers these days can do the most amazing things. If someone struck a match on the moon, they could spot the flare. From the tiniest throbs and wobbles of distant stars, they can infer the size and character and even potential habitability of planets much too remote to be seen, planets so distant that it would take us 500,000 years in a spaceship to get there. With their radio telescopes, they can capture wisps of radiation so preposterously faint that the total amount of energy collected from outside the solar system by all of them together since collecting began in 1951 is less than the energy of a single snowflake striking the ground, in the words of Carl Sagan. In short, there isn't a great deal that goes on in the universe that astronomers can't find when they have a mind to. Which is why it is all the more remarkable to reflect that until 1978, no one had ever noticed that Pluto has a moon. In the summer of that year, a young astronomer named James Christie at the U.S. Naval Observatory in Flagstaff, Arizona, was making a routine examination of photographic images of Pluto when he saw that there was something there, something blurry and uncertain, but definitely other than Pluto. Consulting a colleague named Robert Harrington, he concluded that what he was looking at was a moon, and it wasn't just any moon. Relative to the planet, it was the biggest moon in the solar system. This was actually something of a blow to Pluto's status as a planet, which had never been terribly robust anyway, since previously the space occupied by the moon and the space occupied by Pluto were thought to be one and the same. It meant that Pluto was much smaller than anyone had supposed, smaller even than Mercury. Indeed, 7 moons in the solar system, including our own, are larger. Now, a natural question is why it took so long for anyone to find a moon in our own solar system. The answer is that it is partly a matter of where astronomers point their instruments, and partly a matter of what their instruments are designed to detect, and partly it's just Pluto. Mostly it's where they point their instruments. In the words of the astronomer Clark Chapman, most people think that astronomers get out at night in observatories and scan the skies. That's not true. Almost all the telescopes we have in the world are designed to peer at very tiny little pieces of the sky way off in the distance to see a quasar, or hunt for black holes, or look at a distant galaxy. The only real network of telescopes that scans the skies has been designed and built by the military. We have been spoiled by artists' renderings into imagining a clarity of resolution that doesn't exist in actual astronomy. Pluto, in Christie's photograph, is faint and fuzzy, a piece of cosmic lint, and its moon is not the romantically backlit, crisply delineated companion orb you would get in a National Geographic painting, but rather just a tiny and extremely indistinct hint of additional fuzziness. Such was the fuzziness, in fact, that it took 7 years for anyone to spot the moon again, and thus independently confirm its existence. One nice touch about Christie's discovery was that it happened in Flagstaff, for it was there in 1930 that Pluto had been found in the first place. That seminal event in astronomy was largely to the credit of the astronomer Percival Lowell. Lowell, who came from one of the oldest and wealthiest Boston families, the one in the famous ditty about Boston being the home of the bean and the cod, where Lowells spoke only to Cabots, while Cabots spoke only to God, endowed the famous observatory that bears his name, but is most indelibly remembered for his belief that Mars was covered with canals built by industrious Martians for purposes of conveying water from polar regions to the dry but productive lands nearer the equator. Lowell's other abiding conviction was that there existed, somewhere out beyond Neptune, an undiscovered ninth planet, dubbed Planet X. Lowell based this belief on irregularities he detected in the orbits of Uranus and Neptune, and devoted the last years of his life to trying to find the gassy giant he was certain was out there. Unfortunately, he died